Art History Bay Briefs.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny, and we are the Art History Babes.
And we're here in San Francisco at Ginny's.
We're here in my little room.
It's so nice, guys. It's so cozy. We'll have some content for you to see.
Oh, yes.
Our sitch.
It's like a lovely day. The air is not full of smoke at the moment. We're having like a nice little gentle bay breeze coming in. So it feels auspicious.
Auspicious as heck. This is a baby episode. It is clean. We're here for educational purposes. But first, we pulled a tarot card that we're going to read.
Why not?
This is our vibe for this episode. We think it works. Eight of Pentacles. This is if you read it, Jin. Jin pulled it.
Okay.
Let's get the vibe.
Hustle, grit, craftsmanship. Crafting your artistry takes passion, patience, and grit. Learning by doing is exactly what you're up to right now. You're completely focused on absorbing new skills and mastering your chosen craft. Hustle and commitment are what give you your edge, and you are dedicated to achieving the best job possible. Building a new skill or breadth of work is time-consuming. However, you know that it will be worth it in the end. Keep on chugging. Your patience, commitment, focus, and dedication are put to the test, but you are surely up for the challenge. Day by day, you get better and better, knowing that your skills will build up over time. The more you apply yourself, the more rewarding it feels to see where you started and how far you've come.
I like that. I think that's fitting for multiple reasons.
I think so too. Whenever I pull a pentacle card, it's like, yeah, like this is like we're taking some action, but it's not like action for the sake of action. It's like thoughtful and intentional action.
That is definitely the direction I think we're moving. Opposed to previous. I think this podcast started as a very like ethereal, go with the flow.
Yeah.
Like we just need to decompress. It is what it is. Right? We're just going to talk into mics and see what happens. And of late, we've definitely taken a more not disciplined in a bad way, but just intentional.
Yeah.
Route. We've been making more intentional business decisions, more intentional collaborations, reaching out to people that we really want to work with personally, which has been great. Yeah. And we wrote a book.
We wrote a book, and I'm holding it in my hands for the first time today. Ooh. It is powerful.
Emotions.
Lots of emotions. Just seeing something that was so of the immaterial become material. Because it was all just, you know, in our heads and in Google Docs and in emails. And then to see like a tangible bound book is just wild and so cool. And I want everyone to have it in their hands and love it. That is our hope.
It's really exciting to think there will be people listening to this and holding this possibly at the same time very soon. The book could release before this episode, quite honestly.
Right.
Like, you know us. Who knows? It's 50-50. The book is out September 1st, so you guys will know better than we do right now if that is before or after.
You will know. You are the oracles of that information, not us.
Yeah, so we're very excited. That is our main focus right now, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it is like our child that we just created and is now like out there in the world. And yeah, we're so excited. Just happy that it's out there and that it's done, because it was quite a process to make it happen. But as, we're so glad it happened.
As most new mothers say, we're just happy that part's over. We got our baby now. We're stoked. We're holding it. We're caressing it. All is good in the world. And then also, we've got this baby episode for you all.
Yeah, we have a little baby.
It's been a minute since we've recorded a baby.
Right?
/ released a baby, / even probably thought about a baby episode.
Yeah, I know. Looking at that list, it was like, oh my goodness. We've done so many good ones already, and there are still so many out there.
Which, you know, in the new world that we live in, you know, there's going to be a lot more at-home audio learning.
Online
so
learning.
If you're new to this and you found us because you have no other options, welcome. We're so glad you're
here.
We're
happy to have you.
If you've made it past the tarot and personal gushing section. I'm glad you're still here. It gets more informative from here on.
Yes, we promise.
So should we get into it? What are we talking about today, Jen?
So we are talking about the presentation of the portrait of Marie de Medici by Peter Paul Rubens. And this is part of a large cycle of paintings that Rubens painted between 1622 and 1625. So in 1622, the Queen of France, Marie de Medici, commissioned the artist Peter Paul Rubens to paint a series of paintings celebrating various events from her life. The cycle of paintings, as they're known, adorned one of the galleries of her new home, the Luxembourg Palace in Paris. During the Baroque period, Rubens was one of the most popular and prolific painters in Europe, especially amongst royalty. By adding mythological and allegorical details to the paintings, Rubens worked to aggrandize the stories from Marie's life and visually suggests that her role as queen was divinely ordained.
So basically, God wanted her to be queen.
Yeah, she was chosen. She was the chosen one.
And so it must be. My middle name's Marie, so I feel connected to her.
Yeah.
And everyone always assumes I'm Italian, so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, for both those reasons.
Your last name, it's like, I could see that.
Yeah.
Confusion.
Yes.
Sir.
Wally.
We are recording, sir.
Oh, he has stuff to say.
Angrily.
I don't think he likes
stairs.
These paintings.
Oh my God.
So mad. All right. Well, now that Wally's gotten that out of his system. All right. Back to Marie. Marie came from the powerful Medici family of Florence in Italy and was married to King Henry IV of France in 1600. Henry was assassinated in 1610, leaving Marie to act as the queen regent in place of their son, Louis XIII, who was too young to rule. And Marie ruled as the queen of France for 7 years, but she was eventually exiled in 1617 due to discord with the court and with her son, Louis. However, she eventually reconciled with her son, the new king of France, and returned to Paris in 1620. The commission of Rubens to paint the major events of her life marks her re-entry to Paris and her desire to present her reign as one of peace and prosperity through a cycle of paintings.
Yeah, I mean, art convinces all.
That's how you do it, right?
Remember when I was queen? I was a good queen.
Remember all that peace, all that prosperity? Remember,
so much art, so much peace, so much money.
So good.
You're welcome. During this time period, royal engagements often involved portraits. When the potential bride or groom were geographically far from one another, it was not as easy for, say, the King of France, like Henry IV, to actually physically see his bride before agreeing to a marriage contract. So painted portraits served as a way for a groom to, quotations, see his bride in advance. This particular painting, the presentation of the portrait of Marie de Medici, depicts Henry IV being shown a little portrait of Marie. So it's a painting of a scene with a little painting in it.
Mm-hmm. It's paintingception.
Yes, exactly. In actuality, French and Italian ambassadors presented Marie's portrait to Henry, and the marriage was approved largely due to political and financial reasons. The painting, however, presents an idealized and symbolic view of the engagement.
So this reminds me a lot of contemporary engagement photo shoots or even just the capturing of an engagement to then display as like an announcement.
Oh.
Think about it, like on social media, because at first I was like, this painting is so silly. You know, it's interesting, but it's silly.
Right.
But it's not that silly because we still do this stuff today. So this is basically just like an imagined scene of the moment
that Henry was like,
yes, I'm going to marry this woman.
She must be my wife.
Nowadays, that photo is taken by a sneaky photographer in a bush. you know, on a beach in Tahoe. Right. But it's the same, you know, you're looking for that expression on his face. Or yes. Even just like the photos that people take at weddings where like you're looking for a certain expression on the groom's face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's so true.
It's a little performative, I would say. For no sure. Shame, you know, love. But just reminded me.
Yeah. No, you're right. I hadn't thought of it that way. That is so true. We've been doing it a long time, you guys.
Mm-hmm. We don't change that much.
We don't.
We really don't. So starting from the top of this massive painting, which is over 12 feet high, sit two mythological figures representing the king and queen of the Olympian gods. So Jupiter and Juno, or Zeus and Hera in Greek. So Jupiter, Juno, Roman, Hera, Zeus, Greek. I'm going to say the lady first because, yeah, lady power. Truly. Yeah. So they appear as if they're floating down from the heavens, seated upon a cloud, you know, just...
Yeah. Riding as the king and queen of Olympus do.
Yeah. How else would you expect them to arise?
Truly.
Arrive. We know that it's Jupiter and Juno because both gods are flanked by their animal symbols. Jupiter's is an eagle and Juno's, her animal symbol, is a peacock. So she has a little pair of peacock.
Little couple. Couple of little lovebirds.
I wonder if there's like a name for two peacock. You know how there's like...
Oh, yeah.
Flock of seagulls, a gaggle of
murder of,
geese,
of crows.
Which is the best one.
That's always my favorite of all time.
Murder. Here comes that murder. So loud. So the gods are angled toward one another in this kind of affectionate pose that signifies their bond, their love, marriage. And then there's the actual god of marriage, mm-hmm. who is Hymen, if you recognize that word.
Yeah.
There is, here's the lineage back to, yeah, why.
I know. It's so many layers there. So Hymen, the god of marriage from ancient mythology. Mm-hmm. And then we know the term in terms of female anatomy, where it's like, if the hymen is intact, you are like considered virginal. And that's like the way that marriage mm-hmm. contracts were looked at, where Literally. It was vital for, and still in many cultures is, for women to have that intact.
Yes.
So that's where that word comes. That's where that word comes from. Many medical terms come from
yes.
Greek and Roman words.
Great point to make.
It's, yeah, that's a complicated one.
Quick side note that is also related, but so much of this is reminding me of the new show that I just watched, The Great. Have you heard of
yes.
or watched?
Yes, Catherine the Great with Elle Fanning. What a good show.
It's very good, and it adds a very contemporary humorous spin on all of this stuff, and mm-hmm. there's a scene where she's, yeah, showing up as the new bride. As you were talking about the whole, like, them not getting to see each other, like, that reminded me of it, too. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, like, in love with him because of this letter that he wrote her, and then she gets there and Ugh. Finds out that he didn't write it, and, like, all, you know, God. It's just... So well done. And she gets a, I guess, unofficial
examination
mm-hmm. by not a gynecologist, but a priest.
Mm. Yep.
So, yeah, all of this stuff. It's a great show. Watch it if you're of age. It's yes. very funny. It's not very appropriate.
Yeah.
But back to this painting. So the god Hymen is on the left side holding the portrait of Marie up for Henry to look at. And I think, and then Cupid is holding the
Little
other
cute.
Side of the portrait. So mm-hmm. we've got the god of love. We've got the god of marriage.
Yep.
We've got the married gods of all the gods.
Of all the gods.
Yeah. There's a lot of layered symbolism here
yeah.
validating this union. So Cupid is kind of gesturing toward Marie's likeness and kind of gauging Henry's reaction, mm-hmm. feeling it out. What do you think, bro?
Right.
Like, you think she's cute? And right. he's giving us the face that every woman wants, I guess.
I know, it's so interesting because, like, in reading about this painting and in videos about this painting, people are like, look at him, he looks so besotted. And I look at him and he looks not that amused.
Yeah.
Or not amused, but like he doesn't look entranced or like love struck. He kind of just looks, I don't know.
It reminds me of the way that like a grandfather looks at his grandbaby. You know what I mean? Like it's definitely admiration and like a, oh, but it's not.
Which maybe is more regal for me. Too, because he was like 47 when they married, and she was, I think, like at least 20 years younger than him. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was somewhat intentional on Ruben's part. But yeah, you read about this and they're like, look at him, he looks like he is just love struck, and that's how you would want to be gazed upon. I'm like, really? I don't personally don't know. But you know, beside the point.
Yeah, I'm with you. Questionable. So yeah, Marie in her portrait looks very poised, very regal. It's a tiny little portrait, but she sits as a queen should, shoulders straight, direct gaze, very confident, dressed in fine clothes, jewelry, just looking very important and wealthy and regal.
Which is what you want for a queen.
For sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's not just about love and mythology, though. Behind Henry IV stands the personification of France, a robed female in a helmet, pictured murmuring into his ear. Viewers are expected to assume France is assuring Henry that a marriage to Marie would be advantageous for the country. In the distance, there is a smoldering battlefield meant to signify that in entering into this marriage, Henry can leave behind war and enter into a time of peace. His shield and helmet are abandoned on the ground, now playthings for a couple of putti. Isn't that nice?
Little playful little pootie.
Playing with some battle regalia.
I mean, the one that's like hugging the helmet is pretty great. He genuinely looks like a drunk little baby, falling over.
Pootie always look that way. They just look, you know, like they had too much wine, which they probably did.
Yeah.
Assuming they were real.
I mean, it's our podcast.
They're just like
we
grabbing things that are too big for them. They're always doing stuff like that.
Shenanigans. Truly. I mean, that's very baby-like, though, I will say. Yeah,
definitely.
So Marie de' Medici was an influential patron of the arts throughout her lifetime and her reign. Her aim with commissioning this series of paintings in particular was to validate and celebrate her reign as queen. In this particular painting, Rubens aimed to show the divine approval of Marie and Henry's wedding, as well as the political advantage of their union. Important to note here, by the time this was painted, Henry was dead, and Marie had only just returned from her exile. So her intention was to remind France, and perhaps herself, of her achievements once she married Henry IV. Problem was, her life was apparently not all that interesting. So Rubens had to get pretty creative, hence all of the gods and putti and allegorical everything. So one major achievement was that she did give birth to her son, Louis XIII, and through her marriage to Henry, she provided an heir to the throne in Louis XIII.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah.
That's really what they were, that was their main goal.
Yeah. She fulfilled her purpose. Yeah. She also gave us this dope series of paintings. Right? So there's that. As Ginny mentioned earlier, Henry was 47 at the time of their marriage, had no heir from his previous marriage. So time was ticking.
Yeah.
Things were getting serious. And after her husband's death, Marie ruled France as queen, which, credit to her, not easy for a woman and a foreign woman at that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the great vibes, hardcore.
Right.
Such a good show. It's such a good show. So in commissioning Rubens to paint this series of paintings, she was visually vindicating her rule and her position as the French queen.
Totally. Totally. And I mean, Rubens in particular was so, he was at the time so popular and such a popular court painter because he really was like very good at traveling to different countries in Europe and becoming close with the royalty and painting paintings for them that were like very political, because this is a political painting and the whole cycle
definitely
are political paintings, because it's meant to, you know, really glorify her life and her, specifically like her life in France. So, you know, she came from Italy, entered into this marriage in a country that was not familiar to her, and ruled as queen for a while. So he was able to create this whole visual story of how she came to be a queen in France and how she was an advantageous one.
Exactly. Exactly.
He was good at that. He really was. It's no wonder she picked him.
She needed him. Like, she really needed him to spin his magic and kind of sell her to the French people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're talking about the painting of Henry receiving the portrait of Marie de' Medici, but even more political and more in your face with everything Ginny just said is the one of Marie de' Medici, Queen of France, landing in Marseille, November 3rd, 1600. And it's, we could do a whole nother episode on that one. There's so much going on. But if the first painting that we talked about was an engagement announcement, this is like, what would this be? Like,
it would be,
what's the thing they do for the president? The,
inauguration.
It'd be like an inauguration.
Yes.
It's an inauguration like portrait, but at the time, what would have been the whole event, basically.
Exactly.
Smashed into a large painting, but still a single painting.
A big event comprised into a composition. Yeah. Now, and it's interesting too, because I had thought about that, where it's like she was doing this to convince French people, like, hey, I've been good for you. I've been good to you. But also the fact that it was put into her own palace, I think, is really interesting, because I think in a lot of ways it was also meant to remind herself, like, hey.
And
know?
Her court, the people around, like, I'm back. I'm
like, you're coming to my palace. I just got back from exile. Things were a little bumpy for a while there, but I'm back. I'm good with my son.
Rubens is painting for me.
Rubens,
you heard of him?
24 gigantic paintings for me.
How many paintings has Rubens painted for you, Mary? Didn't think so.
So it was a statement on multiple levels.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we hinted at it heavily before, but also just this like overabundance of marriage iconography, where it's like marriage, love, meant to be, all the gods know it, all of the world, France knows it, everybody knows that we are soulmates.
Right.
Which I'm assuming wasn't the vibe. But
no, I don't, from what I've read, they were not all that enamored with one another. They weren't married for that long. Henry had had multiple mistresses and was supposed to marry one of them instead of her. And then I believe he owed her father a lot of money, because the Medici family was a really powerful banking family. So they were not a royal family, but they had a lot of money and power. So he owed her family a favor.
Yikes. Well,
which is, you know, not how you want it to go, but it's how it often went.
Well, she got to rewrite it how she wanted it
to go.
So isn't that what matters?
That's, you know, you create your own reality.
Truly. Oh, Marie. Oh, sweet baby angel.
Yeah. Have you seen these in person? Because I've been to the Louvre, but I don't think that I have seen these. Or if I had, it was lost on me. It was quite a while ago. I was last there.
I must have at least... Yeah, they're all in the Louvre, huh?
Yeah.
I must have.
Next time.
I think I remember seeing the landing painting. But again, I just don't know if that's the truth or if that's just me very actively remembering the lesson that I sat through in college. That was lovely.
It's hard to sell. Yeah.
Professor Costanza Dopfel, if you're listening, I still remember that lecture. It was wonderful.
Beautiful.
You did an amazing job. If I did not do you proud, I'm sorry. But yeah, no, these just the story, I think, of these paintings of like, mm-hmm. it just reminds me of PR. Like, I don't know how else to put it. And that stuck with me.
Absolutely. And I mean, not to say that marriages haven't and still do take place for like very honest and loving intentions. However, marriages are also in many, many cases a political contractual agreement.
Yes.
And this is an example of that where like this was not a love match. Mm-mm. They didn't meet at a ball and fall in love. Henry was quite a bit older than her. I don't know the extensive history, but I do not think they had ever met before this. And it was strictly because of political and financial reasons, and especially because the Medici were from Italy, so they were by extension Catholic, mm-hmm. and the French monarchy was trying to align with the Catholic Church because of wars that they were waging with other countries. So, you know, it was really driven by that. But you look at this woman who her husband is dead. You know, she had some rocky times with the French court and her own son. And looking back on that, it's understandable, I think, that she would like to idealize that. And I think that's just human nature. You look back on things like that and you want to play it up to be like, oh no, that was beautiful and it was romantic. And obviously royalty throughout time and geographical locations have often looked at themselves as being ordained by some kind of higher power. Mm-hmm. That's not new.
Nope. It is absolutely so not.
You kind of see the combination of all those factors here in this painting.
Yeah, definitely. Now I'm just thinking about the great. So I'm completely lost. So
I need to finish that.
It's so solid. I just finished it like 5 days ago.
Okay.
Well, I think that's all we have for you. That's pretty good.
That's where we leave you.
This is where we say adieu in my best French accent, which is not all that great.
It's so beautiful.
Thank you for listening so much. This has been a little baby episode, an art history babe brief. Check us out on other full-length episodes and all that we do.
All that we do.
Go to our website. Go to our Instagram. Please buy our book. We worked really hard on it. We're really proud of it.
Oh, I'm holding it in my hand again, and it's something.
Guys.
It's something.
So good. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day, night,
morning,
wherever you're at. We love you. We appreciate you, and goodbye.
Talk to you soon. We are history, babe.
So cute, though.
Just an angry little man.
Just came down to be like, hey,
quiet down.
Being really loud.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.